quite some time talking about triage models, and triage certainly, wherever I've spoken about triage across the whole of the world, triage systems have been introduced mainly because of the volume of patients coming into our emergency services and I guess our inability to cope with them on a see and treat basis. So as kind of part of the politics that I started to explain this morning, there is a challenge to the traditions of triage and the way that we work triage, certainly in England, that I would like to share with you. I won't reveal my allegiance as to whether I think this is a good or a bad idea till much later on in this presentation. Okay, so I told you this morning that the government really had a plan. They call it the NHS plan, and this was a plan to give the public what they wanted. And I think I need to be very honest with you here and say that this is really about votes. This is about being re-elected as a government, and most of the interest and the impetus and the impact on our services has really been for this government to prepare themselves for re-election. So I need to say that right away. But they wanted this end to the very long waits that patients had experienced and an end to those regional variances. So they tasked our Department of Health and called and set up a particular group called the Emergency Services Collaborative. And this group really were given the task of reforming emergency care. Now, this group were formed back in 2001, and they set the targets that I talked about first thing this morning, to reduce the waiting times and to roll out a collaborative system and to prepare us for that system response to patient care. So the Emergency Services Collaborative were tasked with creating a very modern and dependable National Health Service. And I think in many ways that is quite true what they have done. So since the beginning of 2002, so that's why this has all happened very much in the last 2 years, they created six waves. In each wave of activity, they took whole groups of hospitals. And the reason for doing this in certain ways is they wanted to, rather than giving us all this information, giving everybody the targets and making us all change at the same time, they were trying to find groups of hospitals that had some of the best examples and some of the worst examples of system management, but in very different ways. So what they're trying to do is make us learn from each other, and I think that has been one of the very positive things that they have done. And there was no choice in which wave you were put into, and there was no choice whether you wanted to opt in or out of this approach. So they taught us about systems approaches, and one of the really useful things that we did was we did what are called PDSI cycles, where you map the patient's journey. You plan and you develop, you look at the kind of analysis, and then think about the way patients move through the system. And it's very interesting when you do this, even for one group of patients. So if you take, for instance, patients who arrive with ankle injury, and from that we will have patients with obvious fractures and patients with very, very minor, mild sprain and minor injury. And there were many steps in the patient's journey that prolonged their time with us. They almost seemed like redundant steps, and we had no idea why we put these steps in the patient's journey. But until you actually map out what happens to them, where they go, how they get into the system and move around, you don't actually start to reveal some of the difficulties that patients feel. So that was one of the kind of ideas. And then we started to benchmark best practice. And the most interesting bit, and I guess the ethics and the morality of this is questionable, but we were told to have this real trial and error mentality. Just have a go. Doesn't matter the consequences. If it seems like a good idea, just have a go. Just see what happens. And that's where this idea of see and treat patients truly came from. So this is the issue that we have around see and treat. It's a model where we are going to front load our system with some of the most experienced nurses and some of the most experienced physicians, who literally, as you arrive at the emergency department, rather than going into a triage queue and then being given a priority, you will be met almost at the door. I will greet you. I will find out what your problem is, I will treat you there and then you can go home in a very, very short space of time. That's utopia, not necessarily reality, but that's what this system is based on. And as we said before, the targets are extremely high, and we were expected to see all of our patients within 4 hours. But there's only one group of patients that we could ever treat and discharge within 75 minutes, and that would have to be the most minor group of patients. Now, the triage system itself doesn't lend itself, certainly throwing most of our resources at some of the most needy, some of the most urgent cases, didn't really match with this idea that we would see some of the most minor patients as quickly as possible. And let me tell you, in political terms, why not? Okay, this group of patients here may well not survive to vote. This group of patients, mainly old people, not necessarily going to vote. This group of patients, able-bodied, working, taxpayers, most definitely going to vote. I probably wouldn't dare say that to an audience in England, actually. I would probably get dragged off the stage. Okay. Now, so why did we challenge? You know, I described to you what I think is an extremely robust, very safe risk assessment triage system that has worked for us very, very well for the best part of nearly 10 years now. I said it was a gold standard, everybody wanted it. But triage came in for some extremely bad press, and it's still kind of out there. And basically, it's been blamed for creating a queue, a huge queue. We were seeing lengthy triage assessments, and I listened to our colleague from GFP talking about the same thing. And when I was in Turin, and I said, it is inconceivable for me to think that you would make patients wait. And in some hospitals in the UK, patients are waiting anything up to 40 minutes to an hour to be triaged. Now, my definition of triage is rapid assessment and prioritisation. So there's nothing rapid about waiting 40 minutes. So really, the queue had started on the other side of your system. They were waiting to get in to be assessed, to be given a priority in the first place. Now, that is extremely dangerous practice. So we have increased waiting times for triage itself. And then, because they are kind of channeled into this, I don't know if this translates, a bottleneck, a very narrow queue to wait to get back into the treatment side of their patient journey, then we were really delaying treatment. Now, I'd be the first to say that what was going on was most definitely inappropriate and quite unsafe practice. What I will most certainly say is that was not triage. What was going on in those departments was ever increasing assessment, huge numbers of interventions, large amounts of information were gathered that at that time the nurse did not need to take that detailed an assessment to give the patient a triage priority. So what we were talking about is triage really being blamed for these lengthy waits to get patients into the system, when in fact we were not talking about triage at all. Okay, so what is see and treat? And this is, again, because we had all of these hospitals working together, sharing ideas, and we were given this permission to trial and error, one hospital decided that they had such poor triage activity, they would just get rid of it. So one day they went, right, no more triage. What we're going to do is move everybody to the front door. The minute patients come in, then we'll see patients. It worked so well for that hospital that they decided that they would share it with everybody else. And then the Department of Health thought this was such a fantastic idea that they basically told us all to have a go and to introduce this see and treat model. So what it requires is the most experienced clinicians, both medical staff and nursing staff, to see the most minor patients. Okay, that's the only way you can have the person with that level of autonomy and decision making and the ability to rapidly assess, manage and discharge patients. They need to be senior clinicians. Patients now are seen in time order, not clinical priority. You know, and I time warped about 15 years when this kind of activity started to happen. But there are some problems, and if you are continually speeding up your assessment, then you may start to overlook some real complex problems. And there are cases already where we really have missed some key questions, particularly around child protection issues, domestic violence, elder abuse, many of the most vulnerable groups of patients who may come to our emergency departments with very minor problems, but some of the key issues that they wish to tell us, but we may need to search for those elements in their care, I think are being given a very poor quality of care. And this is where the stumbling block comes, because we do not have the resources, we do not have the number and the quality of staff to put them all at the front door. And the utopia is this, isn't it, that you'll have a whole range of doctors and nurses just waiting for patients to arrive. And the minute you arrive, you know, I take my patient, you come with me, I completely manage your care and you go. And that's not the case. So what we're now seeing is the queue has just shifted, because we now have patients waiting for see and treat. And because they're waiting for see and treat, they are now a complete unknown entity. We've gone back to a queue of patients that we actually have no idea what the problems for those patients are, because they're being seen in time order. And that, if I remember in history, was the whole reason for introducing triage in the first place, because we didn't have the resources to manage that number of patients. When I came out here to Turin 2 years ago, this was a really new idea, literally. You know, I'd heard of it within a very few short weeks, and I certainly hadn't tried this. But the four hospitals who've been held up as exemplar hospitals who put this into place were demonstrating fantastic reports. When I went back to look more closely at those hospitals, they actually have very, very low numbers of new patients. All those hospitals had less than 35,000 new patients a year. Now, the average emergency department in the UK sees upwards of 65,000 patients a year, going up to 120,000 new patients. So you can see that if you have a small unit, it actually makes sense, doesn't it, that if you can see patients in time order as they arrive, then why would you waste time triaging them? Because it literally did put them into that small queue. So that was one anomaly. You have to stream patients into majors and minors. You need to take out those most major cases. Otherwise, those major cases are sat in your see and treat group waiting for management. And triage has been noted now that it is still necessary to triage the most major of patients. And we've looked at some of the benefits, and I at the time questioned what would the benefits be to patients and carers. Well, that if the model works, that's quite clear, isn't it, that you get to be in and out of the system very quickly. What are the benefits to staff? Incredibly challenging, I have to say, having trialled some of this model. You feel under a great deal of pressure with the clock ticking to move patients through the system. So what are the results? Well, the streaming of patients has really been very successful, and guiding patients to the right clinicians at the right time has certainly been a really positive move for those hospitals that didn't already have that system in place. But the Emergency Services Collaborative told us that if the streaming was to work, then we had to independently staff each stream, because if there's a major emergency in the department and you need to resuscitate a patient, you will take staff from all parts of your team. And then when you come back, you know what's happened to your minor area in particular. You have huge numbers of patients. So they'd said, right, you can't do that anymore. You've got to staff majors and minors separately. And again, in many of our departments, we just don't have the resources to be able to staff those as quite a discrete stream. We've seen many models of see and treat. And at the very beginning, 2 years ago, we were told, this is the model you do this. And then they started to see some of the catastrophic results, particularly in extended length of stay for patients, waiting for this see and treat, in patients with undiagnosed and undifferentiated conditions who were left for significant amounts of time. And there are some test cases that will certainly be within our legal system over the next 12 months that I think will directly blame this system. So we've now seen varying degrees of success and failure. There are some really good success stories out there where this system absolutely works for that team at that time in the type of environment and with the resources that they have. And that's the full see and treat model, where you have enough resources to accept patients as they arrive in the department, and their journey time is minimal. So certainly our primary care walk-in centres, which have smaller numbers of patients and at this time more staff, that will change as patients think that they may get a more rapid service there. We still run a kind of queue, what we call queue busting, that when the minor treatment then becomes incredibly busy and we and patients are getting near to that four-hour target, you send the muscle down there, you get your most experienced clinicians, experienced doctors and nurses, and you get them down there and you get rid of the queue. And we have always done that. And we do that under more pressure now because of the time frames we have. And for most of us, that model works. What we are being encouraged to do now is rapid assessment and treatment for major cases. So they want the consultants, they want the most senior doctors triaging the patients, although we can't use that word, triaging the patients at the front door, making rapid decisions, and I certainly saw some of that activity when I was in the States, and then they hand over that to the junior doctors to fulfil their orders. The problem we have with this model is we've actually removed some of those most senior clinicians, particularly for the medical staff, and we've taken them out of the supervision type of activity that we would normally see for our most junior doctors. And I say this most honestly, I went to many, many meetings within the Department of Health, and one of the outcome measures that the senior politicians used were, when I challenged their see and treat model, was, well, you know, Jill, nobody's died yet. And I'm not sure that that is is a good ethical outcome. I wish I'd have taped this when I was there. Okay, now this will be, just kind of finished, this will be the crux. Can we actually sustain this level of working for any length of time? Within the current time frame that we have to move patients through the system and to be in and out within 4 hours, there is constant pressure. I cannot begin to describe the pressure that the emergency services are under to push patients through their systems. But we are thinking more carefully about who's doing what to whom and to when. So there's greater emphasis on the right staff, improving access and improving efficiency for patients. You know, and I talked to you about the sort of physical and mental cost this morning, and there is incredibly high pressure to do this. And I think the thing that kind of is difficult for all of us to attain is the fact that our triage system is based on this principle. We have had this mantra for a long time that we do not confuse patient clinical priority with departmental management. And basically that's what we've done because, and this is the way that the figures don't add up, that we take an average journey time. So it makes sense that if your patients in minor treatments, who you can get in and out the system very, very quickly, have a very short journey time. They're in the emergency department 15, 30 minutes. Then that allows patients with much more complex injuries and problems to be near their 4 hours. I hope that kind of makes sense. So when you average all of that together, you've got a large group of patients who didn't need to be there very long, and those seriously ill and injured patients have the length of time, I guess, that it takes to move them through the system. So that's how the figures are manipulated, is the word I will be looking for. Okay, so what's the future then? I'm going around the country now talking to departments who are most definitely reinstating triage. They woke up one day, decided to get rid of triage. I have never been one of these. But they've realised that there are times when the flow of patients and the resources will not meet, will not match the needs. And the clinicians in particular have felt the need for that risk assessment tool. They have really physically missed that risk assessment tool. So what next? And this is what it feels like for every single patient. So we could have 40 patients in the emergency department, all at different times in their treatment, and every single one of them effectively has an egg timer with 4 hours worth of sand in. And we need for every one of those patients to make sure they don't breach and the sand runs out. And I hope that kind of gives you an analogy of the type of pressure that the emergency services are under to achieve this. What do I think we'll see in the future? I think we will see an amalgamation of this see and treat model and triage. There are certainly times in my own service where triage holds patients up in the emergency department, or the nurse practitioner will be the best person to sit in triage because there are few patients for them to manage. So we're being much more responsive to where the patient demands are rather than allocating to areas within the emergency department. The resources will always be a key to this success or the demise of see and treat, most definitely. And I think the issue is this, that patients don't want to wait. They have quite clearly said that, and I think that's right. But I think they also deserve to have the appropriate level of care for however long that type of care must take. Thanks for your time.